Madam Speaker, it's a good bill.
Frankly, I'm embarrassed.
The President of the Senate called a hot mess.
Oley Insider is an educational journey through the Washington State Legislature, following interesting and important bills through the legislative process.
This is a serious matter, Mr. Speaker. We're moving the wrong direction here.
Oley Insider is produced by Positive Intentions Media, hosted by citizen volunteers Erica Engelhart and Jay Fratt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, rising in support.
And it's the right thing to do.
All right, we're back again. We're pretty quick this week. I think this is two within 1 week. I'm Jay Fratt. This is the Oley Insider. I'm here with my partner in podcasting, Erica Engelhart. What's up, Erica?
Hello, Jay. Hello, everybody.
So it has been an interesting week. Last session, our freshman session, if you will, covering the legislature, we got some articles published in Clark County Today, some op-eds that affected bills. And this week, the last episode was on an article I wrote about the agency request bills by Nick Brown, and just what the combined look of all these bills, what they would create. It actually got published in the Center Square, which is kind of a major journalistic platform in the country and our state.
I know. I think that is pretty awesome. You did a really good job at getting this out there, and hopefully, you know, a lot more people are educated because of it.
Yeah, and so as a quick update, I will say that I've been in touch with Center Square. The Attorney General's office has sought a correction. I said no. I didn't make any errors. I said most bills, meaning 5068 is not really listed as an agency request bill, so I referred to most in the article. And Center Square backed me up, and they said no correction was required. So it looks like it's going to be out of my hands now, and I believe that journalists are going to be forwarding this story. So there's more to come, hopefully, from more established journalists in Washington State.
That's great news.
Yeah, and then I did capture this. This can be quite confusing. What I've done is I've combined several bills that are going through the legislature, and I've kind of given a lens of what they would look like as a package. And I recognize that it's fairly complex. The article I wrote was very long, and I went to Jim Walsh, chair of the WAGOP, also representative from the 19th legislative district, and kind of all-around top political philosopher and knowledge base, if you will, in the House. So I went to him and kind of got a soundbite of what he thought of the article and if he was seeing the same thing that I was. Would you like to go and play that right off the top?
Yes, please. Let's do that.
So you did a good thing in sort of uncovering a connection between bills like House Bill 2161 and a number of other bills. You connected it, I don't know, to three or four other bills. You could probably connect it to six or eight other bills currently working their way through the legislature here in Olympia. When you put all of these connections together, what do you get? You get a centralizing of law enforcement authority in the office of the State Attorney General, and new powers that the Office of the State Attorney General historically has not had. Attorney generals in Washington for years have pointed out that while the Attorney General is the chief law enforcement officer, the agency is not an investigative agency. It's not even really a law enforcement agency in the sense that a sheriff's department is or a state patrol is, although they oversee those operations. But what these bills are doing is they are turning the State Attorney General's office into an investigative agency, into an enforcement agency, in a way that people screaming about no kings and no tyrants should be very concerned about. It's making the state attorney general's office something like what progressive leftists feared the FBI was under J. Edgar Hoover, which was a sort of weaponized law enforcement entity that either the chief executive, the president, in the case of the FBI, or the governor, in the case of the state attorney general's office, can sic on political adversaries and industries they don't like and all kinds of perceived enemies, real or perceived enemies. And so if you care about civil liberties, if you care about civil rights and the classic senses of those concepts, you should be deeply troubled by what's happening in Olympia now, aggregating and centralizing these powers in the office of the state attorney general. Will bad things necessarily happen from this? Maybe not. But can they happen from this? Definitely, they can happen. So we want to oppose, I oppose all of these proposals. We want to at least oppose most of them in this, for the sake of civil liberties, the civil liberties of individual Washingtonians and businesses in Washington, so that one man or one person or one or two people can't turn the mechanics of government against someone they don't like.
So that was very nice this week. I was basically theorizing and trying to show something, trying to illustrate the dangers. And I was backed up by Jim Walsh, Representative Walsh, and Center Square let the article stand without correction. And again, the Attorney General's office, they just argued one little point that the 5068 was not an agency request bill, which I used the term most once again. So it's out of our hands now. We're going to see if journalists take this up and pose journalistic questions of the AG's office and what the response comes there. I will
quick
say
question.
That, yeah, go ahead.
Who, just to clarify, so who did the Attorney General's office reach out to about that 5068?
It was done during an email chain was sent to me for my response from the Deputy Director of Communications within the AG's office, a Mr. Falk. And okay. In that communication, they called me a tinfoil hat. So,
oh, lovely.
So, and I want to be clear about this. From an objective standpoint, as Walsh talks about, anybody who's concerned about civil liberties should be concerned about this puzzle I put together. We're dealing with people that have lost objectivity in elected office. They are referring to Stephen Miller, who in the Trump administration, I would say is one of the main political philosophers of the Trump administration, who talks about sovereignty. We're talking about concepts that can be debated and concepts that are normal within politics. They're referring to people like Stephen Miller as racist. They're referring to people like Stephen Miller as Goebbels. So we've got this hyper-partisan lens. Why wouldn't somebody who saw politics like that, where it's not this normal debate, where everyone's concerned about civil liberties, where we debate the philosophy and the underpinnings of our governance, why wouldn't we expect someone who's lost all objectivity and is slandering people in debate as Nazis, as racist, you know, using those hyperbolic extremes, why wouldn't we expect someone like that to weaponize their position of elected office? So that's the concern, is we're witnessing a lack of objectivity. Norms have been erased. They blame Trump. Everything is blamed on Trump, but they themselves are behaving in a way that is not normal and seems to lose sight of a vast swath of Washingtonians that don't agree with their lens. And typically from elected positions, there's this higher calling when you serve an elected position that there is an expectation of objectivity, rule of law, and just that seems to be lost. And so, yes, that's why this piece was so important to get out from my perspective. And now we'll see if the journalists take it up and move the needle on it so that we can understand a little bit more about why Nick Brown is seeking to expand the power and opacity of the Attorney General's office.
Yes, perfect. Thank you for elaborating on that a little bit more. I was just wanting some clarification, but I think you're absolutely right. You know, it's like one side thinks that the other side's extreme, but they won't evaluate their own, actions or what they say and stuff like that. So, okay, are we ready to move on?
Yeah, let's get to the meat of this particular episode.
Okay, well, we have just a couple other topics we want to talk about. First of all, this is a short session, like we've been saying, and it's just flying by right now. It feels like a little bit of a whirlwind. So this last week we had a policy cutoff, which we were a little confused about, but it turns out that cutoff was just for bills to be read within the House of Origin. And then there are a couple more, for policy bills.
This is very confusing, and hopefully, remember, for the audience, this podcast is meant to be an educational podcast and covering the legislature, and this is our sophomore session. So this is our first short, compacted session. Erica, I think you made a mistake there, and this is part of the confusion. It's the committee policy cutoff week that we just went through, not House of Origin. That's still coming.
Okay, yes. I believe you're right. My apologies.
And last year, we had more time to learn about, discuss these things in the longer session. In this short session, it seems like these things are coming without warning. So I went to an insider because we were a little confused on a bill we're covering in this particular episode, SB 6346. That's the income tax bill. We're going to get to that. But there's confusion on a bill we covered earlier this season, the income tax, the payroll tax bill, and whether or not that was dead. So we just had committee cutoff. You know, what bills are dead? What are alive? When you talk to insiders, they say things like, well, it's not really dead. So, you know, there is a lot of confusion. So we posed the question to an insider. This person didn't want to be recorded. So I've got their response in text. Can I read that now?
Yes, please.
Okay, so we're referring to the payroll tax bill and SB 6346, which is the income tax bill. And the insider says, bills like these are exempt from the cutoff. Policy cutoff is the deadline for policy bills to be passed by policy committees. Wednesday was that deadline. Bills with a fiscal impact are passed to the Ways and Means Committee or the House Appropriations Committee. They face another deadline next week. We call that the fiscal cutoff. And then bills face another deadline for passage from the Chamber of Origin about a week or so after that, and so on. This system of deadlines is designed to keep the session on track to adjournment, which this year is set of March 12th. However, this system of deadlines does not apply to bills that are deemed necessary to implement the budget, or in Olympia parlance, NTIB. These bills include big tax bills like the one that you mentioned. These can be passed for the first time on the final day of the session if that's what the majority wants to do. So HB 2100 is alive until the final gavel, just like the new income tax bill, the property tax bill, and so forth.
Okay, so that's really interesting and very insightful. So hopefully that's clear to everyone else, but it does make sense to me. I still feel like I have a little confusion there because it seems like there's just always some kind of gray area. But okay, so that does help.
Yeah, and so I think one way to look at it is last week a policy bill, so not with a fiscal impact, mm-hmm. needed to make it out of committee, so that remember last year we talked about this reading list, like it goes to basically it has to move out of committee by last week for it to still be alive if it's a straight policy bill.
So from my notes here, I show on the 17th of this month that is the last day to consider bills in the House of Origin. Is that talking about like to vote on the floor about them in the House of Origin?
Yes, I would believe that's the cutoff that's coming.
Okay, so we had committee and then next would be the...
The fiscal, as he said. So now, right. So then there's a fiscal cutoff and then the House of Origin cutoff. Which that's when you're going to see a lot of activity on the floors of both the Senate and the House.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, because I have been trying to watch that activity as well. And I think I mentioned to you before, it seems to me like there's been more activity in the House versus the Senate. But, you know, we still got a lot of time there, I guess. Well, not a lot, but for the short session, we're on track there.
Yeah. Speaking of Senate action. The meat and potatoes of this particular episode is covering SB 6346, and that is the millionaire's tax that's dubbed the millionaire's tax. And we've covered the payroll tax earlier in this season, and I kind of referred to them as these competing taxes. It is possible that both get passed. Their thirst for more government and more funding is just it seems unquenched.
Absolutely. Cutting spending is just out of the question apparently, so they have to raise more funds, and so taxes is the way to do that.
Yeah.
But this hearing in the Senate, I watched it. It was actually very, there's a lot of people there. But, you know, I found it interesting because the very first thing they did in this hearing was they started the meeting and they made a motion to suspend the 5-day rule. So from my understanding, the 5-day rule is, you know, they're supposed to give the public, or, you know, maybe it's the rest of the legislature, I don't know, but they're supposed to be 5 days before they have a hearing on a bill after it's, you know, introduced or something. So they immediately made a motion to suspend the 5-day rule. There was a couple senators, I think it was Senator Braun and another, they objected to this and called for a roll call vote. So long story short, it was a 15-9 vote, and so they suspended this 5-day rule. So this bill has really kind of been like rushed through up to this point. I don't know if that'll continue from here, but I guess we'll see.
Well, and your theory earlier when we spoke was that this rush might be to close the public input, to not give more time to public input. I was able to track down Brian Haywood, the founder and head of Let's Go Washington. So the guy who's behind a lot of these initiatives we've seen in the last couple years. Let's go to his testimony first that he gave in the committee hearing, and then we'll get to kind of this why suspend the rules and kind of the broad public sentiment towards this particular bill.
Sounds good.
Like many in my position, I've got options. I can change my domicile, I can move my business, I can restructure my income to avoid it. That's the truth. And even this person that just testified has every option to do that. In fact, in just the past 2 weeks, I've heard from directly or listened or heard about over 50 couples who have already in the process of or soon to be changing their domicile out of this state, including one that you all have heard of, probably the loudest Democrat in Seattle named Nick Hanauer, who's changing his domicile. The people who truly get crushed, though, are Washington's 657,000 small business owners, farmers, contractors, doctors, tech founders who run pass-through companies. A great year, a big sale, or even a one-time payout pushes their personal income over $1 million, triggering a 10% hit they can't easily avoid.
Yeah, so I did watch his testimony, too. Thanks for replaying it for anyone who missed it. You know, he makes some great points there. There was a lot of people testifying. This hearing actually went on for 2 hours. I guess it wasn't supposed to be that long, but then they extended it because there was just so many people who wanted to give their input. And in fact, I think, so we did kind of mention it a second ago, that part of the reason we think that they suspended the rules and kind of sped up this meeting was to prevent the public from giving too much input, because, you know, it, a lot of people have a strong feeling about an income tax, you know, because we all see that they're trying to start it as a millionaire's, you know, income tax, but there's nothing that would ever stop any future legislation from changing that or lowering that threshold. But, you know, people that that would be affected by that income tax right now, they do have options. They can move. They can, like you said, restructure. So, you know, that kind of leaves everyone else, you know, without many options here. So,
yes, in their thirst for growing the governmental pie. Don't forget the game theory on this within politics is that this is this income tax is unconstitutional from the Washington State constitutional perspective, and the game theory is that the Supreme Court will rule that it's unconstitutional and it needs to apply to everyone. So looking around the corners, basically the legislators and the insiders are seeing that it's a millionaire's tax in its face, but once the Supreme Court rules, it's going to apply to everyone. And that's kind of the sneaky trick that is of most concern. I caught up with Brian Haywood after the committee hearing, and I got a clip of him, and he speaks about the public outpouring. The public outpouring and logging in against this particular bill. Let's go to that now.
Yeah, I'm Brian Haywood. I was here to testify against the income tax that they're trying to impose on Washington State, and just got out of the hearing. It was quite interesting because, number one, there was just a sea of purple SEIU t-shirts with a smattering of red WEA t-shirts that were in there. Clearly, that was, and all the testifiers were wearing purple or sort of testifying union talking points. So there seems to be a real strong backing for pushing the income tax by the SEIU. That was really apparent to me in listening there. It's also a little bit of a show, right? There's not any real questions. You've got maybe a minute max to sort of say something and be done. But I think it's important to participate in it and make a voice heard. We had 61,000 plus people sign in con on this bill, which is a record. That's never been, 43,000 is the most that's ever been done. We just did 61,000 against it, and the legislature needs to listen to it.
So first of all, I think that is just awesome that we had, you know, in that short period of time, that rushed 3 days since they introduced the bill, that we had a record number of people, you know, sign in as con against the bill. I think that is just amazing. And that's part of what we're here for. You know, we want to have an impact, and that definitely should have an impact. Whether the legislator listens or not might be another story, but at least the people have spoken.
Yeah, it's undeniable public input.
Yes, absolutely. So I did want to mention also, because, you know, I listened to the staff reading of the bill. He didn't read the bill, you know, the whole thing, but he gave like kind of a nutshell. So 5% of the funds raised from this, by the way, it's supposed to bring in $3.5 billion per year, and it's supposedly supposed to only affect 30,000 taxpayers as of now. But like we mentioned before, that would probably change soon after. So 5% of it goes to a public defense services stable account. And then the other 95% just goes to the general fund. So it was kind of interesting because some of the other testifiers, you know, there was like a couple teachers and stuff that were testifying in support of the bill who seemed to think that it was going to increase funding for education, and then they had to clarify that there's nothing in there that specifically says it's for education, but that a majority of the general fund budget does go towards education. So, but there was a little bit of confusion at one point. I found that quite interesting.
Well, that's the trick, That's the trick. We saw this before with the cannabis tax. The legalization of cannabis was labeled as, you know, all this money is going to go to schools. And then you look around and you say, well, where's all this cannabis money? Well, it always went to the general fund. And just right. like this tax is going to the general fund, they just attach like some virtuous role of government as like the label of what it's going to go to, which isn't a lie, but it's not quite the truth.
Exactly. Yeah. Whatever they can do to get the reaction from the public and the testimony that they want in support of their bill here.
Yeah, and so the insider word is that there are competing factions within the legislature. We've got the governor's endorsement is on this millionaire's tax, okay? But then we've also got this Representative Scott bill that we've covered, this payroll tax that is competing. And so we're really going to have to take a keen eye on this competition. Do they both win and Washington loses double? Or, you know, is there going to be some sort of fracture within the Democrat Party on which one is supported? And will that create an entry point for the minority party to have some sort of power in this struggle?
Well, part of me wonders if it wasn't set up like this so they could overlap, because one is an income tax and one is supposedly an excise tax on the employer. So, you know, they very well could both pass. And, you know, that would be, in my opinion, very, very horrible for Washington.
Yes. And our roads still won't be fixed.
Exactly.
So till next time, I hope that this was informative and you learned something. And we're here, we're kicking, we're screaming, we're writing, and we're recording.
Yes, absolutely. And we're having fun while we're at it. So hopefully you're enjoying this journey with us, and hopefully you're starting your own journey as well, so we can all get active and have an impact.
All right. Peace out, everybody.
Thanks.
Let us take a step back and let us reason together.
The legislative process can be intimidating. Let's go through it together.
If you could focus on the policy and not motives, please proceed.
Like and subscribe to Ole Insider on your favorite podcasting app. All resources and show notes will be available for each episode at oleinsider.com.
Mr. Speaker, I've stood up on the House floor repeatedly this year.
You can follow Erica Engelhart on X at For the Good, Jay Fratt on X at Jay Fratt, and Positive Intentions Media on X at PubSec Media.
It is our duty.
I really want to say thank you.